Thank you once again for tuning in to Cinema Central. I'm your host, DJ Ace, and I have been teasing this for a long time, so now it is finally here for you to listen to my review of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Been saying I was going to do this for a long time, and now the time has finally arrived. I've been doing this in preparation for Avengers Infinity War coming out on April 27th, and I went back and watched all 18 films in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Now I give you this excessively deep dive of everything you need to know from every movie, including the summaries, the major plot points, the film connections, and just the little tidbits along the way. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is, of course, comprised of 18 films, and this particular podcast is going to be split into two parts. So this is going to be part one. I will be covering the movies Iron Man through Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and we are going to begin this journey. Quick note, spoilers for the first 9 films of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Again, that's Iron Man through Captain America, the Winter Soldier. If you need to know about those kind of things, then now you know, and we're going to get started. All right. Iron Man came out in 2008, directed by Jon Favreau. Iron Man is the movie of that, of course, started it all back 10 years ago. And in this movie, we meet Tony Stark, played by Robert Downey Jr. Tony Stark is a genius in charge of the world's largest arms manufacturers, and he's a bit egotistical. Tony was supposed to get an award at this convention in Vegas, but he doesn't show up. The presentation does mention his parents dying in a car crash. We meet the person who would eventually become the villain, Obadiah Stane, played by Jeff Bridges, who looks completely intimidating when he's bald. We also meet his Air Force friend, Lieutenant Colonel James Rhodes, in addition to his assistant, Pepper Potts, played by Gwyneth Paltrow, and his AI assistant, Jarvis, voiced by Paul Bettany. In a weapons demonstration, Tony unveils the Jericho missile and mentions the proprietary repulsor technology. On the way home, he gets nabbed by terrorists. He meets a doctor named Jensen, who he met a long time ago at a convention, who saves his life by plugging him up to a car battery, keeping shrapnel from reaching his heart. Tony makes a mini arc reactor to do the same thing. Then they both build the first Iron Man suit, which they use to escape. Jensen unfortunately dies along the way. Tony also noticed the bad guys have a lot of his weapons. Upon returning home, he declares that his company will no longer make guns. And we get to meet Agent Phil Coulson for the first time, played by Clark Gregg, who is a member of the Strategic Homeland Intervention Enforcement Logistics Division. Say that 5 times fast. After the press conference, Obadiah drops the name Ironmonger. Then Tony goes and builds a new suit. He figures out an icing problem from going up into the atmosphere, and Jarvis makes the offhanded comment about now being able to visit other planets. Stan Lee appears at this benefit party, where Tony and Pepper have a moment. Tony learns his weapons are still being used by bad guys and suits up, and so he goes to find his weapons and destroy them. And can we just address the fact that that tank shot him out of the air? Like, that is literally the best tank gunner in cinematic existence. Okay? Think about how big Iron Man is flying 100 feet in the air, and it's a tank. Like, with the main barrel, that is a miracle shot right there, and that guy should be proud, even though he gets blown up moments later. Later on, Tony asks Pepper to hack his own company, and Obadiah shows up at precisely the wrong time, which we could attribute to cinematic inconvenience, but to be honest, the screen literally flashes, "Security breach!" Obadiah shows up at Tony's place and reveals he ordered the hit on him and takes his upgraded arc reactor straight out of his chest, mentions that his father worked on the Manhattan Project, then he makes the 2 classic blunders, revealing his master plan and threatening the girlfriend. We get a War Machine tease with Rhodes seeing the suit saying, "Next time, buddy, except not for you, Terrence Howard." Haha. Tony fights Obadiah with a weaker arc reactor and still wins. So let's just imagine how fast he would have won at full power. And the film wraps up with Coulson name-dropping S.H.I.E.L.D., Tony declares he is Iron Man, and the first post-credit scene is Samuel Jackson as Nick Fury talking about the Avenger Initiative. One extra thing I forgot to mention is Happy Tony's driver was played by the director. And here's a final thought. Was Obadiah part of Hydra? It's never explicitly mentioned, but it would certainly fit. The Incredible Hulk, 2008. The first thing worth mentioning is this movie handles the entire origin story in the opening credits, which is kind of neat. Some little tidbits, we see ordnance orders from Stark Industries and a letter from Nick Fury. The movie picks up with Bruce Banner hiding in Brazil, played by Edward Norton. And he has some correspondence with this guy on the dark web, codenamed Mr. Blue, trying to find a cure. William Hurt plays General Thunderbolt Ross, who will stop at nothing to capture Bruce. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. Bruce accidentally cuts his finger in a soda factory, and Stan Lee drinks the contaminated soda. Ross recruits this decorated soldier named Emil Blonsky, played by Tim Roth, to help hunt down Banner in Brazil. The encounter accidentally triggers a transformation, and the Hulk emerges in this same soda factory. And one thing I like about this film is this particular scene, because it's shot from the perspective of the soldiers reacting to this unstoppable force that has been unleashed upon them. Ross lets Blonsky in on a few government secrets, like trying to recreate the super soldier serum from World War II. Banner gets to Virginia by some weird cinematic miracle, and gets help busting into his old school by bribing a security guard with a pizza. Fun fact, the guard was played by Lou Ferrigno, who played the Hulk in the original TV show. Ross pulls his new serum out of deep freeze, and the case has a Vita-Ray logo on it, and he injects Blonsky with the super juice. Turns out Bruce's old sweetheart, Betty Ross, played by Liv Tyler, has the original Project Data. Then Ross assaults a college campus, and I mean he assaults a college campus. Like, if I was just, I could have been in college. I mean, I was in college. And then, you know, I'm just cruising, and then boom! Humvees show up out of nowhere, and you're just like, it's World War III out here. That's exactly what Thunderbolt Ross does. Bruce swallows the thumb drive and then turns into the Hulk. Ross uses these cool sonic blasters on the Hulk that don't work. The Hulk then has to save Betty from Ross, funny enough. And then the Hulk turns back into Bruce later. There's a joke about wearing his purple stretchy pants. And then they go to New York to meet Mr. Blue, aka Samuel Stearns. Fun little bit here. It's actually a S.H.I.E.L.D. monitor that tracks Banner's communications, which is how they're able to find him in New York again. Blonsky is clearly going a little cocoa for Cocoa Puffs. Bruce gets a cure from Stearns, then the military grabs him. Blonsky then makes Stern turn him into a Hulk-type creature, and Stern name drops Abomination. Then there's a leader tease that never gets paid off. Abomination goes on a rampage and kills a taxi driver from earlier in the film. Bruce drops out of a helicopter and smashes into the ground, then turns back into the Hulk. Then he fights Abomination in Harlem. Ross uses a minigun on Abomination, which doesn't work. And let's just address the fact he just used a minigun on a building in a city. We get a cool Hulk smash moment, and then he beats Abomination without killing him. Film ends with Bruce hiding out in Canada, seemingly gaining control of his powers. Then there's a post-credit scene where Tony introduces himself to General Ross in a bar. So here's the thing about General Ross. The dude is crazy. He is literally crazy. Okay, because he launches a spec ops team in Brazil. He assaults a college campus and he declares World War III on Harlem. Okay, the dude clearly has no beef with like rules or regulations. And he's basically as bad as the Hulk. Like, I think he did more damage than the Hulk did in this movie. Like, honestly. Iron Man 2 came out in 2010, also directed by Jon Favreau. Somewhere in Russia, this dude named Ivan Vanko is building his own arc reactor, obviously scheming against Tony Stark. Back in America, Tony opens the new Stark Expo, and he plays a clip of his father from the 1974 Stark Expo. We see Tony testing his blood's toxicity levels, and Stan Lee cameos as Larry King. Tony gets summoned to DC by U.S. Marshal played by Kate Mara. This is the same Kate Mara that would play the Invisible Girl in the 2015 Dumpster Fire Fan 4 stick. In DC, we meet Senator Stern, who is trying to get Tony to hand over the Iron Man tech. We also meet Justin Hammer, played by Sam Rockwell, Tony's competitor, I guess, if that's what you want to call it. And we are reintroduced to Lieutenant Colonel James Rhodes, who is now played by Don Cheadle. It is revealed that the Palladium, which is charging Tony's arc reactor in his chest, is also coincidentally killing him. And Tony promotes Pepper to CEO of Stark Industries. Yay! Pepper brings someone from legal in to make Tony sign over his company. And it is actually Natasha Romanoff / Black Widow posing as Natalie Rushman, who is played by Scarlett Johansson. Then in Monaco, Tony decides to drive his own F1 car, and then Ivan, aka Whiplash, did never actually say the name Whiplash, but that's his villain name, everybody. Tony has an Iron Man suit in a suitcase and beats Ivan. Woo! Justin Hammer breaks Ivan out of prison and uses his intellect to bring Tony down a notch. Interesting to note that HammerTech HQ is in New York. This is interesting if you're watching the Netflix shows, particularly Luke Cage. Tony goes a little nuts at his birthday party and Rhodes has to stop him. Tony name drops War Machine and the fight ends when they both shoot repulsor blasts at each other. Nick Fury catches Tony at a donut shop and it's revealed that Natalie is actually one of his spies. Fury also mentions that Howard, Tony's father, was a founding member of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Coulson is also brought back to watch Tony. And Justin Hammer also helped out pimp out the War Machine suit. Tony finds out that Anton Vanko, Ivan's father, helped design the arc reactor. And Tony rediscovers a new element that his father Howard had discovered and makes it as a new source of power for the suit. Coulson drops by and picks up a prototype Captain America shield, then mentions he's going to New Mexico. Ivan betrays Justin Hammer, unleashes an army of drones at the expo, and locks up the War Machine suit. Natasha and Happy go to the HammerTech building to stop Ivan. And it's interesting to note that Natasha would have just hacked the door, but Happy just runs in, setting off the alarms and allowing Ivan to escape. Tony and Rhodey defeat the drone army and Ivan, and Justin Hammer goes to jail. In the end, Tony gets his evaluation from S.H.I.E.L.D. and is pegged as a consultant, and in the post-credits, Coulson goes to New Mexico and finds a crater with Thor's hammer in it. Thor came out in 2011. To begin, Thor is my favorite character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I just love the fantasy element he brings to the table, and he's also a BA. The movie opens with an exposition by Odin, played by Anthony Hopkins, highlighting the details of a war between Asgard and the Frost Giants, and how he lost his eye as he tells it to a young Thor and Loki. And he drops this memorable line, "A wise king doesn't seek out war, but must always be ready for it." Fast forward, Thor, played by Chris Hemsworth, is about to be crowned king on Asgard, my favorite set piece in the MCU. And this is the one and only time he wears the iconic helmet. Odin refers to Thor as his firstborn, and mentions his hammer Mjolnir. But he doesn't get crowned king when Frost Giants sneak into the treasure vault to steal the casket of ancient winners. We see the Infinity Gauntlet on a pedestal in the background. The Destroyer, this kind of guardian thing, incinerates the Frost Giants. Needless to say, Thor is upset and goes to Jotunheim with the Warriors 3, Hogan, Fandral, and Volstagg, and Lady Sif and Loki, played by Tom Hiddleston. We meet Heimdall, the gatekeeper of the Bifrost, played by Idris Elba. He also has these magical eyes that can see everything, except when they don't work. And Loki asks about keeping the Bifrost open. Heimdall explains it would blow up the planet. There's a big fight on Jotunheim until Odin shows up. Then he strips Thor of his power and exiles him to Earth and puts an enchantment on his hammer. Then a bunch of scientists, Jane Foster played by Natalie Portman, and Eric Selvig played by Stellan Skarsgård, and this girl Darcy hit Thor with a van in New Mexico. Some folks in the desert are trying to pull this hammer out of the ground, including Stan Lee in a truck. Then Agent Coulson arrives. Loki learns he is actually a frost giant and was adopted by Odin, so he puts Odin in some sort of coma, S.H.I.E.L.D. shows up and grabs all of Jane's research and equipment. Selvig mentions a colleague that worked on gamma radiation, and then S.H.I.E.L.D. showed up and he disappeared. Loki names himself King on Asgard, which doesn't really sit well with everyone else. Jane helps Thor get to the crater, and we see a particular agent in the background with some glasses. I know that shouldn't seem really unusual, but it pays off later. Coulson calls for eyes up high with a gun, and we see this guy grab a bow and arrow instead. Coulson later mentions this guy's name as Agent Barton. Thor gets caught, and Loki visits him to say Odin is dead and his mother disowned him. And then Loki goes and makes a deal with Laufey, his real father, the Frost Giant King. And the Warriors 3 and Sif go to Earth to find Thor and tell him the truth that Loki's a jerk. Which we should know by now. Loki sends the Destroyer to kill Thor and freezes Heimdall with the casket. Coulson thinks the Destroyer is another Iron Man suit. Thor gets killed by the Destroyer, then gets his powers back and kills it. Loki kills Laufey in a plot twist. The Asgardians all return to Asgard after Heimdall broke free of the ice and killed two Frost Giants because he's BA. And then Loki turns the Bifrost on Jotunheim to destroy it. Loki and Thor fight. Loki makes the classic blunder of threatening the girl. And then Thor destroys the Bifrost bridge. But before they both fall to their doom, Odin grabs them both. But Loki falls into the abyss anyway. And we presumably aren't ever going to see him again. In the post-credits, we see Selvig meeting with Fury to discuss new breakthroughs in limitless power. And then we see Loki in a reflection. And this cube, of course, is the Tesseract. Captain America, the First Avenger, came out in 2011. This is what is called a flashback movie, meaning most of the movie is actually one huge flashback. In 1942, in a church in Norway, the villain Johan Schmidt, played by Hugo Weaving, and Hydra show up looking for the Tesseract. He calls it the Jewel of Odin's Treasure Room. He points out a wood carving of Yggdrasil, the World Tree, and I'm pretty sure Thor talked about it to Jane in the last movie. And then we flip over to Steve Rogers in New York, played by Chris Evans. Steve keeps trying to enlist, but gets rejected every time because he's puny. And then he gets in a back alley fight, saying he could do this all day. Bucky Barnes, his only friend, played by Sebastian Stan, shows up, who's about to ship out. They both go to the World Exposition of Tomorrow, the same place as the Stark Expo in Iron Man 2. We see young Howard Stark, played by Dominic Cooper, showing off a flying car. Rogers tries to enlist again and is found out by Dr. Erskine. Dr. Erskine, who is with the Strategic Scientific Reserve, the SSR, signs up Steve. Yay, good for him. Back at the Hydra base, we meet Dr. Arnim Zola, who helps Schmidt harness the power of the Tesseract. At the SSR boot camp, we meet Agent Peggy Carter, played by Haley Atwell, and Colonel Phillips, played by Tommy Lee Jones, who just absolutely owns this role. Rogers is chosen for the Super Soldier experiment, and Erskine explains that he was forced to use the prototype serum on Schmidt, and that had unexpected results. The serum amplifies a person's character as well as its physique. The experiment takes place in a secret lab in Manhattan, no surprise, and Howard Stark is a part of it. And the experiment happens to use the serum plus Vita rays, we've seen that before, and Hydra agents infiltrate the experiment, kill Erskine, and take the serum. Rogers, in his new awesome abbed-out body, chases them down, but the serum is destroyed. Back at Schmidt's lair, a couple of Nazis come there and kind of start, like, I don't know, being mad at him, I guess. And they name drop Red Skull. Then they get vaporized. The government makes Steve, Captain America, to sell war bonds. Eventually, he gets to Italy in 1943 and finds out Bucky had been captured with a bunch of other American and Allied soldiers. Agent Carter and Stark help him get there, and Rogers saves Bucky, who was experimented on by Zola, and he meets Red Skull officially. Stan Lee appears for Steve's medal ceremony, who of course doesn't actually show up. Steve puts together an elite team who would be called the Howling Commandos, including Bucky and Dum Dum Dugan. I cannot make this up. This is a real character. He's the guy in the bowler hat, if you need to know. And Howard hooks him up with a vibranium shield. Then he goes and blows up Hydra's bases. Then there's a train scene where Bucky falls off into a chasm and they nab Zola. They go after the final base. The Red Skull makes a mention of Valkyrie in his epic speech, and Cap gets captured. Then he escapes and goes after Red Skull again. He kisses Agent Carter, he gets on a huge bomber, Skull gets zapped by the Tesseract, which means he is technically alive somewhere in the universe, and the Tesseract falls into the ocean. Steve crashes the plane into the Arctic Circle, and Howard finds the cube in the bottom of the ocean. Rogers is found in present time and woken up 70 years later by S.H.I.E.L.D. and Nick Fury. And in the post-credit scene, we get the actual first tease for the Avengers, and I saw this movie like 3 times just for that tease. The Avengers came out in 2012 and was directed by Joss Whedon. So the Avengers movie is going to undoubtedly go down as one of the biggest moments in film history. The first movie to bring a culmination in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. The buildup was historical, and this movie was a phenomenon. I remember my first viewing fondly. I went to the first show. This is back when the first show was actually at midnight. And this is also the night before the last day of finals for the semester. And we went anyway. It was great. This is the kind of show where there's cheering during the movie, and it was just a whole lot of fun. Anyway, to the synopsis. Loki gets a fancy new staff and a vague exposition from this alien fellow called the Other. I'm not making this up. IMDb, look it up. The alien dude is literally called the Other. Then on a S.H.I.E.L.D. base on Earth, we meet Fury, Coulson, and Agent Maria Hill, played by Kobe Smulders. Fury mentions that they need to move the Phase 2 prototypes, and we see Dr. Selvig again, who's working on the Tesseract in the basement, and we meet Agent Barton again, played by Jeremy Renner. Selvig refers to him as the Hawk, so we have his full name now, Hawkeye, anybody? Barton also tells Fury that doors open from both sides, and then, coincidentally, Loki pops out of the Tesseract. What a coincidence. Loki takes control of Selvig and Barton, and he steals the Tesseract. Also, quick note, as Selvig, Barton, and Loki are like walking away, there's like this panning wide shot, and I don't know what it is, but like Loki trips. It's weird. Look, just next time you watch the movie, check it out. You'll see what I'm talking about. The base explodes and Fury declares that S.H.I.E.L.D. is now at level 7. Somewhere in Russia, Natasha is doing an interrogation. The Russians do name drop Black Widow, and Coulson calls her up to go pick up the big guy. Somewhere in South America, we meet Bruce Banner, now played by Mark Ruffalo. Nick Fury gives Steve Rogers a mission report. Then Tony just switches on the Stark Tower lights and Pepper Potts is there and it's all very happy. And Coulson calls Tony and Tony makes a joke about being a live model decoy. That's funny if you A, know comics, or B, have been keeping up on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. lately. Pepper calls Coulson by his first name, Phil, and we hear mention of a cellist. Coulson meets Steve and mentions that Banner's experiment was meant to reproduce Erskine's serum, and then Loki has a long-distance phone call with the Other, who mentions him. I know you can't see me doing air quotes, but they're there, okay? And then we get introduced to the helicarrier, which is probably my second favorite set piece in the MCU. Coulson mentions his Captain America trading cards, and we see that particular agent with the glasses on the bridge. I promise you that is going to pay off. They find Loki in Germany and Captain America fights him, and then Iron Man shows up and they take Loki back with them. Then Thor shows up and takes Loki, then Iron Man and Thor fight and Captain America has to break it up, and they all go back to the helicarrier. And Tony calls Thor Point Break, and he also points out one of the bridge crew playing Galaga. Banner says last time he was in New York, he broke Harlem. We see Tony wearing a Black Sabbath t-shirt, which is the band who wrote the Iron Man song. And there's a brief mention of Jane Foster being moved to a safe location. Natasha interrogates Loki, or does she? Dun dun dun. And then Loki manages to turn the Avengers on each other. And at that exact moment, Barton attacks the helicarrier and Banner turns into the Hulk. We get a little bit of Hulk versus Thor, and the Hulk tries to lift the hammer, which is kind of funny. And then Thor gets tricked by Loki's illusion again. And then Widow has to save Barton, and then Loki kills Coulson, and it's very sad. Here's the interesting part is that when Fury runs up to Coulson, Coulson's the one that gives Fury the idea to use his death to bring the Avengers together. Of course, it's Fury that uses the trading cards and Coulson's blood to really seal the deal later. Then they all meet up in New York. Tony name drops Earth's mightiest heroes. The Chitauri invade from a hole in space, and there's a cool hero pose. There's an epic fight, and Hulk smashes Loki, which is awesome. And then these crazy guys, like the S.H.I.E.L.D. Council, votes to nuke New York City. Great idea. Great idea, guys. So Iron Man has to grab the nuke, and he throws it into the wormhole, and he, for a moment, went into space. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? They saved the city. Okay. Stan Lee appears in the newsreel at the end of the movie, and we get the first Thanos reveal, and Thor and Loki go back to Asgard, Cap goes with S.H.I.E.L.D., Banner joins Stark, and in the post-credits scene, everyone eats shawarma. I've never had shawarma. I gotta admit it. I haven't done it. Kinda want to now. This brings us to Iron Man 3, which came out in 2013. It opens up in Bern, Switzerland, 1999. Tony is a drunken mess, and this is where he actually met Jensen for the first time. He also meets this dude named Aldrich Killian, played by Guy Pearce, who wants him to join AIM, the Advanced Idea Mechanics. Tony, of course, turns him down. And then Tony does it with this girl named Maya, who makes self-healing plants that explode. In present day, Tony's making the Mark 42 suit. There's this villain terrorizing the world named the Mandarin, and Rhodey gets his suit repurposed as the Iron Patriot. There's a TV that says that AIM handled the rebranding. Tony is suffering from PTSD from the Avengers, and Pepper is still in charge of the company. And Happy is now in charge of security. Aldrich meets Pepper, and she turns down his proposal, Project Extremis. Tony even has PTSD when he sleeps and freaks out Pepper. Happy follows Adrian's goon, and his goon meets this other guy, and he gives him a thing, and then the other guy literally explodes. And Happy gets put in the hospital for the rest of the movie. Maya shows up at Tony's house saying they need to talk. Then the Mandarin shows up with some helicopters and blows up Tony's house, and he kills the robot arms, which is really sad, but no one else dies. Tony crash lands in Tennessee, tracking a lead. He meets his kid named Harley and gives him live ammo. That's smart. The kid constantly triggers Tony's PTSD. The kid mentions he should make a suit that can turn invisible. Then Tony has to fight these crazy fire people. We see Stan Lee at a auction. And Tony also meets this guy, Gary, and it got weird. And then Pepper talks to Maya, but both of them get captured by Killian. And then it turns out the Mandarin is just an actor named Trevor, played by Ben Kingsley. Tony gets captured. Turns out Maya was in on the whole thing. She wanted Tony to fix the original formula. Killian says this is all because gods are falling from the sky. Nick Fury said the same thing in The Avengers. And Killian kills Maya. Rhodey also gets captured in the Iron Patriot suit, and he gets forced out of it so Killian can use it to kidnap the president. Also, Killian can breathe fire. Also, the vice president is in on the plot to kill off the president because he wants his daughter to get extremist because she's like missing a leg. Tony and Rhodey bust out. Tony waits for the Mark 42 bits to show up, but they're stuck in Harley's barn. And I think this scene was actually kind of a homage to a scene in The Iron Giant. Tony saves a bunch of people from Air Force One, which explodes, but it's a good thing that there's two of them. And then he tells Jarvis to activate the house party protocol. Rhodey and Tony go after the president and Pepper. Then there's a boss fight. All of Tony's suits show up, including one that can turn invisible. Imagine that. And then Rhodey saves the president. Pepper kills Killian because she got injected with the extremist stuff. And then Tony activates the clean slate protocol, blowing up all of his suits. and just some ending stuff. A lot of people are arrested, including the vice president. Tony gets the shrapnel taken out of his heart, and then he fixes Pepper, and then Happy wakes up from a coma, and then Tony gives Harley a bunch of cool stuff, and Tony also saved the robot arms from his old house. Post-credits scene, the whole thing was actually Tony telling this story to Banner, who coincidentally fell asleep, which is kind of awkward. Thor: The Dark World. This movie opens kind of like the last Thor movie, with Odin telling a story of the dark elves and their evil leader Malekith, who was defeated by Odin's father Bor, who hid their cool master weapon, the Aether, away where no one could find it. Loki gets imprisoned by Odin, Thor puts the Nine Realms back in order and kills this rock giant, Fandral, one of the Warriors Three, is recast with Zachary Levi, and Hogan just kind of leaves. The Bifrost is restored and Thor has some emotional problems that he's trying to work through. Jane is in London and Eric Selvig kind of went mental. Jane and Darcy investigate a warehouse and Jane gets sucked into a portal and absorbs the Aether. Heimdall mentions the convergence of the Nine Realms to Thor. A dark elf ship and Malekith awaken. Thor goes to Earth to find Jane and brings her to Asgard, and Malekith sends one of his goons to Asgard. Frigga, Thor's mother, visits Loki in jail. She's also the one that taught Loki magic. The dark elf in the Asgard prison turns into a curse and starts a jailbreak. Loki gives him directions, and Heimdall single-handedly destroys a dark elf fighter because he's BA. Curse kills the palace shields, Malekith kills the throne, Curse kills Frigga, and Thor fries Malekith's face off. There's this touching funeral scene. Stan Lee is in a mental hospital with Eric Selvig. Thor goes against Odin's orders and breaks Loki out of prison to take those old secret paths that Loki used in the first movie so they can get Jane and the Aether away from Asgard. Darcy gets Selvig out of jail, mentions he had a god in his head and he wouldn't recommend it. Thor and Loki face off against Malekith on the Dark World, and Loki betrays Thor. It is a ruse, of course, and then Thor blasts the Aether, but it puts itself back together, and then Loki kills Curse, but dies himself. Jane and Thor return to Earth, Malekith attacks Greenwich, England, and there's a boss fight with a whole lot of this gravitational weirdness. That frost giant monster from Thor 1 kind of shows up as the convergence begins, and we see like the Nine Realms, and there's this one planet that's clearly a fire planet, and Thor kills Malekith with gravity spears? I'm calling them gravity spears, okay? And then he goes back to Asgard and squares up with Odin and turns down the kingship, and surprise, surprise, Loki faked his death and took Odin's place on the throne. Post-credit scene, Volstagg and Sif drop off the Aether with the Collector, who name drops the Infinity Stones. Second post-credit scene, Thor kisses Jane, and also that giant frost giant thing is still roaming around. Someone should probably do something about that. Last one of these first eight, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, came out in 2014 and was directed by the Russo brothers. This movie is a doozy and a game changer in the MCU. All right? Lots of stuff happens. Steve Rogers, Captain America, meets Sam Wilson, played by Anthony Mackie, jogging around the National Mall. Then Natasha picks up Steve. They're both working for S.H.I.E.L.D. now. Turns out these pirates hijacked a S.H.I.E.L.D. ship, and they're led by Batroc. As in Batroc the Leaper. I can't make this stuff up, man. It's a comic book reference. Anyway, moving on. Here we go. S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Sitwell is on board this ship. And this is the guy with the glasses that I've been mentioning this entire time. Agent Sitwell's been in the background for like three movies. Okay. And this is really going to get fun. Captain America and Natasha are joined by Brock Rumlow, played by Frank Grillo, on the mission, and Cap proceeds to kill like 20 people and beats down Batroc and sees Black Widow on a side mission. Then we get to see the Triskelion, the S.H.I.E.L.D. HQ in DC. Nick Fury shows Steve the Project Insight, which are three second generation helicarriers. Cap goes to the Smithsonian to the Captain America exhibit. There's a quote from President Ellis on this sign, the president from Iron Man 3. There's a Howling Commandos exhibit. Bucky Barnes has his own little exhibit as well. And then Steve visits Peggy Carter in a hospital. Turns out she's still alive. Turns out she also helped found S.H.I.E.L.D. Fury realizes something is very wrong at S.H.I.E.L.D. and we meet S.H.I.E.L.D. Security Council and Secretary Pierce. We've met the S.H.I.E.L.D. Security Council before. They are the crazy guys who tried to nuke New York City in the Avengers. Secretary Pierce is played by Robert Redford. Fury tells Pierce to delay Project Insight. And then Cap goes and visits Sam, and Sam mentions that he lost his wingman, Riley. That's completely irrelevant, but now you know. Fury's BA SUV is attacked by all these goons. He tries to make an escape. Apparently, his SUV could also fly. That's a callback to the first Avenger. Then a masked man takes out the vehicle, and Fury narrowly escapes. We see Steve going back to his apartment, and he flirts with his neighbor. And it turns out Fury's stuck inside his apartment, and he tells him to trust nobody. And then Fury gets shot, like, 3 times, and he gives Steve a flash drive. The neighbor turns out to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent sent to watch Captain America, Agent 13 to be more specific. I don't know why that's the designation, but there it is. Steve goes after the shooter, the same masked man from earlier, and he catches his S.H.I.E.L.D. like a frisbee with his cool metal arm. Agent Hill shows up and Fury dies. Steve has to hide the flash drive and he goes back to the Triskelion where they try to apprehend him in an elevator and so he has to escape S.H.I.E.L.D. He goes back for the flash drive but Natasha found it and she tells Steve about the Winter Soldier, the man that the intelligence community doesn't believe really exists. But she does because it turns out he shot her like 10 years ago or something like that. And he's been appearing on and off over the last 50 years. The council votes to continue Project Insight. And Natasha and Steve are on the run trying to open the flash drive. Some clues take them to Steve's old army base, the SSR army base. And he flashbacks to the cool flag scene. They find a secret bunker, and there's a picture of Howard, Peggy, and Colonel Phillips in it. And then there's a second room with Arnim Zola is alive on an old 1970s computer, and he spills the beans on the whole Hydra infiltration of S.H.I.E.L.D. that's been going on for decades. He shows images of Winter Soldier and Tony Parent's murder. Then S.H.I.E.L.D. decides to blow up the bunker. Steve saves Natasha, and they go to Sam's house for help. We see Agent Sitwell talking to Senator Stern from Iron Man 2. They embrace and whisper, "Hail Hydra." And it's really kind of creepy. And that is why I've been mentioning Sitwell this entire time, because he's a Hydra agent and he's been behind the scenes like this entire time. That is nuts. Then Captain America and captures and interrogates Sitwell, who spills the beans on Zola's algorithm, which is going to kill like 20 million people. And he also name drops Stephen Strange. How peculiar. So they take Sitwell with them, but then the Winter Soldier attacks and kills Sitwell. Natasha shoots his goggles off and Captain America takes his mask off and surprise, it's Bucky, everybody. Then they all get captured, but Agent Hill rescues them. Turns out Hill helped Fury fake his own death, and she mentions using a drug that Bruce Banner had made. Bucky starts to have flashbacks, which is neat. And then Steve decides it's time for S.H.I.E.L.D. to go. And Steve has a flashback as well to after his mother's funeral with him and Bucky says, "I'm with you to the end of the line," and it's very touching. Turns out Stan Lee is a guard at the Smithsonian, and Cap steals back his old suit. They infiltrate S.H.I.E.L.D. and Cap spills the beans on Hydra. The helicarriers get launched and there's a lot of shooting going on. Agent Hill name drops Falcon. Natasha dumps all of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Hydra's files on the internet. Fury shows up to override the security. Winter Soldier clips Falcon's wings. See what I did there. Cap and Bucky finally face off. Pierce kills the entire security council. Rumlow and Wilson get to fight each other, and Bucky shoots Steve like 3 times. That's brotherly love. Then the Hydra folks fire up Zola's algorithm. Some interesting names pop up on the monitors. Agent Hill, President Ellis, Tony Stark, some dude named Michael Linden, and some other lieutenant. I don't know what kind of Easter egg this is, but man, Michael Linden, you must have done something, man. You done messed up because you just got targeted by this death fleet. Then our heroes successfully change the targeting parameters and the helicarriers proceed to blow each other up. Fury kills Pierce, Cap saves Bucky, the ship crashes into the HQ and on top of Rumlow. Captain America falls into the river, Bucky saves him, and here's all the aftermath stuff. Agent 13 joins the CIA. Agent Hill joins Stark Industries, Senator Stern gets arrested, Rumlow ends up surviving, Natasha gets to speak in court, Nick Fury visits his tombstone with the inscription, "The Path of the Righteous Man," which is an Easter egg to Pulp Fiction. Fury mentions going to New York for some reason, and Natasha gives Steve the Winter Soldier file. Post-credits, we see this dude named Strucker. He has Loki's staff, and we see Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. And second post-credit scene, we see Bucky in the museum. And that's it for part one, everybody. That is movies 1-9, but stay tuned for part two, which will cover Guardians of the Galaxy through Black Panther. And then Infinity War will be right around the corner. Thanks again for tuning in to Cinema Central. And this is one crazy ride that ain't stopping anytime soon. Have a great day.
Booyah!